welcome to Inside the Post-Dispatch, the podcast that brings you inside the St. Louis Post-Dispatch newsroom. I'm Jeremy Kohler, and you can find all of our podcasts at stltoday.com/podcasts, or use your favorite podcast app through iTunes or Google Play. So I've been a guest on this program before, but this is my first time hosting Inside the Post-Dispatch. And if this goes well, maybe they'll let me jump into the regular rotation. If I don't do well, they'll probably still let me. We have an all-crime episode today. We're going to be talking about what's happening with policing and crime in St. Louis. I just this week had my 20th anniversary at the Post-Dispatch, and as I look back, the one topic that I keep coming back to is covering crime and policing. I think it's fair to say that crime is a major problem in our region, and it's something we keep dealing with or failing to deal with year after year. So statistics might show that crime is rising or falling, but it's always there. It's always pervading our lives in ways that people in other regions have to deal with less. And so it's an important beat at the paper. I covered it for several years. I have Christine Byers with us today, who's been on the police beat for 9 years. We also have Josh Renaud, a designer for the Post-Dispatch, who's been doing some really good journalism lately and is one of the masterminds behind our new crime tracker, which now includes all of the crime reports from St. Louis County and 89 separate municipalities, which has been a major challenge, and Josh will talk about that. So I'll ask you, Christine, what's happening on the crime beat this week?
So this week brought some very interesting new information to the way that crime is handled in the city of St. Louis when it comes to the city police and arrest rates for low-level offenses and the racial gaps in those numbers of those arrests. Specifically, the University of Missouri St. Louis Criminology Department has partnered with several other communities across the country and researchers to look at this issue and really sort of dig down deep into the numbers. And what they found was somewhat surprising, basically that the number of people city police are arresting for low-level offenses has been on the decline since 2002. And they also found that the racial gaps among those arrested for those crimes are significantly narrowing from a ratio of 5 to 1 cut down to 2 to 1 in between the years 2002 and 2017. So that is a pretty shocking finding, I think. It certainly came as a surprise to the police chief and the mayor this morning during the press conference where they unveiled the numbers. The tricky part, though, is trying to understand what's driving those trends. Nobody can seem to quite put a finger on it, but there were two factors that were brought up. One was that the crime numbers nationwide are trending downward. So perhaps there are fewer arrests because there are fewer offenses. That's one possibility. The other one that was more unique to us locally was that at the beginning of the study period, again in 2002, the city police department had 1,200 officers. At the end of the study period, at the end of 2017, they were down to 900 officers.
Wow.
Which is really amazing because as you and I have been here long enough, Jeremy, covering city and county police, the city police have always been called the largest police department in the state, in the region, what have you. And now, with 900 officers, I think they are neck and neck with St. Louis County.
I think they may be down to about half of the size that they were when I was covering the beat.
Wow.
in the mid-2000s. That's an unbelievable change. And you can also see, with half the number of police officers on the staff, they write reports. So it's half of the level of reports that were being written at one time. It makes me question, what is the level of crime right now?
It really is hard to put your finger on also with the low-level offenses. Because, for example, if there is a homicide, one would assume that most people are going to call the police to report that there's been a murder, that somebody has died. However, on a low-level offense, let's say disorderly conduct, somebody walks by a group of people fighting. You may call the police, you may not. And the police are only going to know about that and report that incident if they make an arrest or if they get involved. But if people are calling the police less often for these low-level offenses, that could be also another reason why those numbers are lower. The researchers in this particular study I'm talking about, they also did look at trends when it comes to felony arrests. So, and they did find that the arrest levels, even though they're on the decline also for felonies, it runs in line with the felony crime rate. Hmm. So there doesn't seem to be much variation there. And it's trending downward because the rate of crime is trending downward correspondingly. Hmm. So it really is hard to nail down. The next goal for this project is to now look at the data by neighborhood in the city of St. Louis to identify even further down on a more microscopic level, what do the trends look like in smaller areas.
So when you say the rate of crime is down, the rates of reported crime is down. And when you talk about low level, what sort of offenses are you talking about in terms of, is this what you would call the classic broken windows policing type of arrests that used to be, you know, maybe done more often, or?
Sure, absolutely. And yes, so we're talking about, like I said, the disorderly conduct, disturbing of the peace, municipal ordinance violations. The biggest drop, the category that saw the biggest drop was bench warrants. And one of the interesting findings of this study suggested that these arrests, especially for bench warrants as well, were on the decline well before the Ferguson crisis happened. And so it sort of somewhat flies in the face of the Ferguson effect theory, although there was the most steep decline by 20% in bench warrant arrests happened between 2013 and 2014. Again, the researchers didn't want to try and figure out the reasons behind that, but they did throw out two suggestions. Again, the manpower issue with the police department. But the other issue they did bring up was, of course, that was the year of the controversial police shooting, as we all know, that led to nationwide protests and calls for reforms and fewer police interactions for low-level offenses, especially municipal offenses. So there was legislation we had passed, Senate Bill 5 passed, which really cracked down on municipal courts. And there was also, just sort of this awareness for how arrests for bench warrants, though they seem harmless, can really drastically impact someone's life if they can't afford to make their bail.
And when we talk about bench warrant, it's when somebody's wanted and didn't appear in court on a traffic case or a low-level offense.
Exactly.
Okay. So you've been covering crime for 9 years now, and we've seen a steady decrease in reports of crime. There's an old adage of crime reporting that that the crime rate and the actual incidence of crime are two separate things. Do you think that the actual level of crime has decreased, or do you think that just the way we're talking about it, the way we're counting it, has changed?
Well, I think it's probably due to both. I mean, certainly you and I have done some stories to explain how the way crime is counted changes depending on the administration, depending on how it's done. So that can certainly have an impact. But, you know, one of the things that is kind of difficult to understand and wrap your mind around is how can there be fewer arrests in a community that's often called the most dangerous in the country? That doesn't seem to be like good news. And certainly Chief Hayden was very careful in how he responded to this news, because I said, have you directed officers to focus more on violent crime rather than low-level offenses? I mean, has there been some sort of directive given that's leading to this trend? And he said, absolutely not. But he said it is no secret that we are focusing on our resources on violent crime. So for him, he really wants to dig deeper into the numbers, too, and compare that to the crime rate.
So we've seen homicide. We had a year last year with over 200 homicides, and we're on pace for pretty close to the same number this year, or maybe just slightly below. How have the police been responding to that? And are they encouraged by a slight slowdown, or does this remain a crisis for them?
Well, it's funny you should say that, because about 2 weeks ago on a Friday, Chief Hayden was saying, you know, I went into the weekend and we were 19 homicides down compared to the year before. And that was the weekend we had, 6 homicides in 24 hours?
Right.
And then later in the week, I think we had 3 more additionally. So, we are still slightly below what we were last year, but nowhere near as much as we were last year. So I think some of the encouragement that officers were feeling, you know, it ebbs and flows.
What do you think? I mean, do you have any indication what's driving these, especially when you see 4 or 5, 6 homicides? I worked the day that a number of them happened, and they were like within blocks of each other. And it did seem like one or two may have been related. What's driving these crimes?
The police say overwhelmingly disputes over drugs, drug money, drug transactions, those sorts of things. But it's also important to keep in mind the fact that aggravated assault numbers are really the numbers to watch, because it's those shootings could have resulted in a homicide, you know, if somebody was just a better shot, perhaps. So we have incredible medical care now. More people are surviving horrific injuries. There was a police shooting that, you know, a 15-year-old was shot 4 times, once in the head, and has survived. The real number to really gauge whether or not violent crime is up or down is really incorporate those aggravated assaults, those shootings that don't end up in a homicide. And those are up.
Another thing we've dealt with at the Post-Dispatch is dealing with the police department, covering them, trying to cover them. And there's been a lot of talk, you know, over the years about transparency. How has it been like? You know, have you been able to get basic information about crimes? I know that on a weekend I worked, and it was really hard to get the police to talk about some of the crimes that were happening. And you have to explain, you know, we have a million readers every day reading our site and looking for information about this. It's really important to people. You know, how have they responded to you when you've asked questions?
By and large, I think they do the best they can. Earlier this year, they lost their public information manager. She was a civilian, longtime civilian employee, which, you know, there's a lot to be said for having that sort of civilian perspective in that role, rather than a police officer who's accustomed to keeping information close to the vest and only telling certain people certain things. So it's just sort of that cultural difference there between a civilian and a police officer in that role. So, but as a result, I mean, yeah, we really are at the mercy of very, very brief summaries of crime that occur on the weekends, especially, and at night especially. Information is pretty scarce. And so as a result, you know, we have to go to the scenes, which we've always done, and talk to the community and that sort of thing. But it would be nice to get more information, but we always want more information, don't we?
One thing you mentioned is that the city police department has shrunk. It may be around the same size as the county police department, which has grown significantly, is hiring more officers thanks to Proposition P, right? And taken over some of the municipal contracts and so forth, which is a good segue to talk to Josh. A lot of the crimes, a lot of the policing is happening in the county. And for a long time, it's been hard for us to kind of track that, because there's so many different police departments the cities themselves jump from one police department to another, and sometimes we don't even know about it until weeks after.
Yes.
Kinloch, for example, we just found out that they were going to be patrolled by the county police, and it turned out that they had actually been patrolled by Northwoods for almost a year.
Yep.
Before that, and you have jurisdictions moving from their own police department to the North County Police Cooperative, to the county police, or to St. Anne. Normandy has taken over some contracts. So the county, the municipalities are a significant part of the policing. Can you talk about the challenge that we've had kind of keeping track of that and trying to see where the trends are in the region without being able to see the municipal crime?
So the tricky thing, we launched a crime tracker for St. Louis City like 2 years ago, and there were a lot of challenges in making that, you know, just from a coding perspective and analyzing the data and stuff. But it was still pretty straightforward because it's one giant data set from one police department, and it's consistent, you know. So it's, you know, St. Louis City is big. There's a lot of neighborhoods, but it was just one data set, and it was always in the same place every month, and that made it, you know, relatively easy for us to put that crime tracker together. But the county, as you said, is a completely different animal. I mean, there's so many different police departments. They all use different systems for keeping track of their crime statistics. Some do contract with the county for their data analysis and reporting, but others have their own systems. Some of them would put data on their websites, others not. And so for a long time, we just didn't even bother trying to tackle it because it was such a huge, huge task.
Right, but, and this is a voluntary process on their part. There's no law that says they have to keep statistics at all.
Well, they do have to report their UCR stats to the state. Yeah. And in fact, that's kind of our solution. That was our in to making the county crime tracker. So we decided that we could at least get the crime totals for all the departments from the Highway Patrol. And that gave us at least a single place we could go to get all those monthly crime numbers. So these are Part 1 crimes, the more serious crimes, not the lesser ones that Christine was mentioning in that UMSL analysis. But like murder and larceny, burglary, those kind of crimes are the ones that we're talking about. But the other part of the crime tracker that from the city that people really love is the incident map, where we take the individual incidents and we show you what happened last month in a given neighborhood in St. Louis City. And we can do that, again, because the city puts all that data in one place where we can get it and kind of convert it for our uses. But there is no single place that you can get that granular level of crime data for every single police department. And so in that case, what we had to do was just go to who could be our biggest partner. And in this case, it's St. Louis County Police. So they are the largest department, and they patrol all of the unincorporated areas plus whatever municipalities they have contracts with. So we could get incident data for all those places, and that's places like Jennings and the unincorporated areas. So that's a good chunk of the county, but still leaves out lots of municipalities, whether it's, you know, DePere, Hazelwood, Florissant, University City, Creve Coeur. And so when we launched the crime tracker, the county had contracts with some of these other municipalities for kind of data collection, and they added them to their own map. And so that gave us also access to their incidents. But in the weeks after we launched the crime tracker, we heard from hundreds of readers. We put a little link on the crime tracker where people could tell us which municipalities they wanted to see incident maps for that we didn't have the data for. And we heard from hundreds of readers. And I think it also was spurring readers to get in touch with their police departments. I heard from at least one chief who told me that he was hearing from readers and wanting to know why their department didn't have an incident map. And so over the last couple of weeks, the county, I think, has signed new contracts and got more municipalities on board. I think we've added nearly 30 new incident maps since we launched the crime tracker in September. And we can't take sole credit for that. Most of that legwork is being done by the county. But I think by bringing awareness of, you know, which departments are sharing data, which ones aren't, and I think that has kind of put some pressure onto it. So there's still some holes. University City is probably the biggest one that people are asking for right now that we have not added yet. Florissant is another one, Hazelwood. But we're still working trying to add more of those departments.
It's hard to believe that in a region with a problem that, like we have, that no one has done this before. There's not a regional map where someone can go and look at trends and look at where hotspots are. It's that really took Josh Renaud.
Yeah, and it's, well, you know, the other thing too is just all the things you have to figure out. Like we didn't have there's no single place you can go to find out who patrols who, right? And so that we had to compile a list of those things so that we could know how to group municipalities and which ones, you know, for example, as we got this thing going, we would get, you know, I'd run a scraper and it would ingest all the data, and then I would see who's missing data for this month. And so we had to make sure that what we thought was missing data was actually missing data, that it wasn't just that somebody was contracting with somebody else. And so one of those that kind of slipped through the cracks was Kinloch, as you're saying. And so Berkeley is an example of a department that actually failed to report data for several months in two different years. And they actually faced a financial penalty from the state because of that. And so, you know, but we had to get confirmation that they were actually, that the data really was missing, that there wasn't some mistake or something like that. But it was actually Berkeley had missed their deadline multiple times over 2 years. And then we saw something like that happening with Kinloch, and we thought maybe it was the same thing, that maybe they were like understaffed or, you know, there was some problem keeping them from reporting crime stats. But what it actually turns out had happened was November 2017, they had signed a contract with Northwoods, and Northwoods had taken over. And so all of Kinloch's crime data was being reported under the Northwoods umbrella. And so that's just one of these things that nobody had heard about and wasn't on our radar until we noticed the crime stats were missing and we started asking about it. And now, even in just this last year, now they've changed again. So there's been a ton of changes, especially since 2014, a lot of kind of consolidation, which seems good, but it sure makes it a headache to keep this crime tracker together. I already have two more. There's, you know, Kinloch and then Charlac are the other ones that in forthcoming updates to the crime tracker we'll have to kind of move them around, redraw the map, and other stuff to accommodate the patrol changes that they're making.
Just a decentralized mess.
Yeah.
So why do people care? Why do they want to look at this on a map?
Well, everybody wants to know what's happening in their neighborhood. You know, it's just like the St. Louis question, where did you go to high school? You know, we really care about this hyper-local stuff. And everybody wants to know, is there crime happening on my street or one street over? And so, like, that's why those incident maps in particular are so popular. People want to know what's happening really close to them. But there just hasn't been a good place to get that. And we're hoping to be that central place that people can go to. And as you said, these crime statistics don't tell the whole story. Right now we're just showing part one crime, which is the worst of the crimes. And, you know, there are ways to kind of fudge those reports. So it's not 100% perfect picture, but it's better than what we've had before. You know, to this point, there wasn't really a way to kind of look across the county and, you know, get a picture.
Just to interject here too, I know we're always quick to sort of beat up on the city because we expect so much from them being, you know, the largest agency. They should have this public information game together, right? Well, just to add to, you know, the quest to find out and get a sense of what's really going on in our communities, it is not that uncommon. In fact, it's expected among the crime reporting staff here that there are going to be homicides that occur in St. Louis County that we don't know about until I get the information from the coroner's office at the end of the year. We have found at least two or three cases of homicides that occur in smaller jurisdictions where the police departments never notified the media that these had occurred. And so it sort of left these communities sort of wondering what happened. And I can just think off the top of my head here, I've run into that situation in Ferguson and in Florissant, looking into reports right now of it possibly happening in Riverview Gardens. And I had a conversation with a police official once about why didn't you put a press release out about this homicide? And it was sort of an enlightening discussion to just show me that it doesn't necessarily seem like it's malicious as much as ignorance, perhaps, because the explanation,
important.
Right. But the explanation that was given to me was, well, we knew who did it. We didn't need the media's help. And so then I just explained, I said, well, look, you know, the public and the community has a right to know.
And they care.
That there was a homicide in their neighborhood, in their community, regardless of whether or not they can help you catch the bad guy. This is about understanding what's going on in your community and being safe and all of these things. I mean, I constantly find myself saying, it's very simple. When you look out the window and you see a bunch of police cars on your block, don't you want to know why?
Yeah.
And isn't that a reasonable question?
Well, Christine, the answer is, why don't you come in the morning and call 89 police departments and ask if they had any homicides last night?
That seems feasible.
Okay, good. Josh, you're probably the closest to the data. What do you take away from it? What now that you can see kind of a large picture of how crime is reported in the area, what have you taken away from it?
Well, we have like on the front page of the Crime Tracker, there's kind of a like a regional trend chart, and where we're kind of combining city and county crime totals over, I guess it's like 15 years or something like that. And you kind of see in that chart what you were talking about before, that generally there had been a downward trend in crime, but we're starting to see, particularly in the violent crime, it's starting to trend back up over the last few years. And that's kind of the big takeaway, that there had been a pretty long decline in crime, but it is starting to, to poke back up. It's also been kind of interesting just to see, in working on this project, how tiny these places are, and the really weird, some places that are big that are, relatively crime-free, And we try to, in this crime tracker, every page uses the same scale the charts do. And the reason we do it that way is so that if you kind of page through it, if you kind of skip from municipality to municipality, you can see, or see at a glance, oh, this city has way more crime than the one I was just looking at. And, it's kind of feast or famine, it seems like, among different police jurisdictions in terms of crime. There's not a whole lot of middle of the road. It's either, it seems to be really safe or, kind of a lot of crime.
Yeah, and Kinloch comes to mind because I just wrote about that police contract. 300 people.
Yeah.
Yeah. there's a lot of money floating around for law enforcement now after the Prop P in the county. They're hiring police officers. Police officers are getting up to 30% raises in some cases. They're buying all kinds of new equipment, cars. They're about to get body cameras and dashboard cameras. So there's a lot of funding available from the taxpayers for policing. It's just amazing that that Josh Renaud probably has a better handle on where crimes are occurring than any police officer in the area. It's just so fragmented. So, Josh, you mentioned you wrote a story recently that talked about an anomaly what seemed to be an anomaly in the crime reports. Can you talk about that?
Yeah. So there was a reader who wrote to us about I think it was Maplewood. That they had spotted on the Maplewood crime report page that over a 6-month period, Maplewood was showing -1 incidents of rape. And the reader, kind of wrote in to say, this can't be right. You can't have a negative number of rapes. And yeah, on the face of it, that would seem to be right. You can't have a negative number of crimes. But the reason that showed up that way is kind of the way police account for crimes in this this UCR system. It's an FBI way of counting crime. It's called UCR. And one of the key things about it is that these crime stats don't reflect like the number of crimes committed in a month. Like when we say 38 total crimes in September, we're not talking about 38 happened in September. What we're actually saying is there were 38 reports of crime in September. And a lot of those reports might have happened in a previous month. And there's different reasons that they do that, statistical reasons and whatnot. One of the main reasons, though, is just like for comparison's sake. Like if we were counting crime only like based on what month it happened in, then it would be impossible to do a fair comparison between like this current month we're in and maybe a month a year ago where we have a whole lot more data that came in after the fact. Like the current month would always have less crime than the older ones. And so by counting it in this way, based on when it was reported, you can make fairer comparisons from one time period to another. So in the case of this -1 rape, what happens is that the police, it usually happens in places that don't have a lot of crime, or maybe it's a category of crime like rape that's really uncommon in a particular place. And so maybe someone called in with to report a rape, and that happened in September. And so for the September statistics, that would be one rape. That's how it would show up. But then maybe over the course of the investigation, the detectives decide that was a false report and this is unfounded. And so in the next month, what they'll do is they will put a -1. They'll use the same incident number And basically they're canceling it out and they add a negative one to the rape total. And over the course of the year, those things kind of cancel each other out. But if you're just looking at that one month and no other rapes happen in that month, then it'll say negative one. So it's really weird. It doesn't happen very often, but the reason it happens is because of this way that they account for incidents of crime.
Yeah, it was an interesting read. I'm glad that, you know, obviously readers would have a question if they came across that. I'm glad that we were able to provide that extra context to it.
So. I'm really glad readers are reading to that level of detail and noticing those things and bringing them to our attention. That's really great.
It is. Yeah, that's one of those. It's one of these little hidden things on the crime tracker that I didn't even know if people were really using it or not. So exactly. It's great to know that they are.
And so what is the URL for the tracker?
So stltoday.com/crime tracker, just as one word, will get you to the front page. And then from there, you can see either the city crime tracker or the county crime tracker. And they kind of update at different frequencies. Like the county is very, the city, I should say, always within a few days of the beginning of the month, it'll be updated. So like right now, you can see the September data for St. Louis City. The county, on the other hand, really lags because a lot of the munis take forever to file their crime reports. And so we use a system where we're kind of looking for a lowest common denominator. Like once we have about 80% of the crime reports for a given month, then we'll switch to that month. So like right now, we still haven't rolled over to August yet. It's going to be a little bit, to September, I should say. So that's going to happen soon, but there's still a bunch of departments kind of straggling and making their August reports to the Highway Patrol.
So. I'll have to look and see if my car theft shows up on the August numbers. I had my car stolen from in front of my house in August.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
Okay, well, great chat. And I thank you guys for joining us on the podcast and hope to have you again.
All right, thanks so much.
Thanks, Jeremy.